Hey everybody, welcome to our training session on the Retirement Coaching Public Seminar. I'm Steve Sandusky and with me is Mitch Anthony. And Mitch and I are going to take a few minutes here and we're going to walk you through the Retirement Coaching Public Seminar. So this is a presentation that you can use to introduce the program to your clients, to prospects, and deliver this in a public fashion. You can do this as a public seminar live in person, or you could record this through a webinar service. We happen to be using GoToWebinar to record this, so you could use a service similar to this and record it and then put it on your website as an example as a presentation. You could drive some traffic to the website. You could have perhaps a sign-up box there where people have to give you their contact information and then they can actually view the pre-recorded webinar. So a couple different ways that you could use this. So what we're going to do, I'm going to take just a couple minutes here, give you some general thoughts on delivering a presentation like this, and then Mitch and I are going to walk through the presentation, each of the slides. Mitch will pretty much lead. I'll add some color on it, and we'll go from there. So just some very quick things about the presentation. This is designed to be about 45 to 60 minutes long, and we've got a couple places in here where there will be exercises for the attendees to fill out. These will be two of the tools that are made available to you in the Retirement Coaching Program. And also would encourage you at various points throughout your presentation, if you are delivering this live, to make it interactive. So ask questions of the audience. You may want to start out by asking some trivia questions to get some interaction going, to get the audience warmed up. You can even give them some simple rewards for them answering the question. Maybe it's a sleeve of golf balls or a hat or, you know, whatever you might have available, just something fun to keep the audience engaged and light and feeling good. Also, when we get to the point in the presentation where they will be filling out the two tools, that would be a good time, if you can, to actually play some background music, because I know it can get kind of awkward if you're in a room and there's 10, 20, 50, 100 people in there and you're asking them to fill something out and then all of a sudden the room just goes dead quiet for 5 minutes. That just seems a little weird, so if you can, that would be an ideal time to have some music come on just so there isn't dead silence in there. All right, so those are just very basic ideas on how to deliver the presentation, and now Mitch, why don't you add some of your thoughts here, and we'll start going through the presentation.
Okay, so I think probably a lot of the people using this tool or this seminar will be familiar with my book, The New Retirementality, and this is based on a lot of the premises in the book, and actually it was in that book that I first introduced the concept of return on life as juxtaposed against return on investment. So a good way to start this conversation with your clients is to say, you know, today we need a much deeper dialogue around retirement. The old conversation around retirement was just about reaching a number. How much do you need and what do we have to do to get you to that number? But, you know, the question that I like to pose is, what's the point of building a nest egg only to put it in a dying tree? And so what's important here is to use your money to get the best life you can out of this stage of life called retirement. So that's where we're going to start the conversation with people, is to simply say the conversation has changed, it's expanded, it's no longer just about a number. So,
I just want to add here, Mitch, that as we're delivering this presentation, everyone watching this, you can see at the bottom here we've got some speakers' notes there. So those are in the presentation for you as the advisor, as the speaker, just to kind of give you some ideas of what you might want to talk about. And obviously when you're delivering the presentation, that's going to be hidden, so all they're going to see is the presentation itself, and the left sidebar that you see here of course is not going to be there as well, but we're just showing you those things as we're going through the training here, and also we want you to see what the speaker's notes are for each of these slides.
Yeah, and so what is return on life? And this is something I'd like to encourage you to define for your clients, especially if you're an ROL advisor, a practitioner. And the return on life approach to financial advice is about getting the best life we can with the money we have. It's not just building a pile of money. And one of the phrases I like to throw out on this topic is we need two things to retire well. One, we need enough purpose to get up in the morning, but we also have to have enough money to sleep at night. So it's about purpose, and it's about money. So gone are the days of mandatory retirement at 62 and 65. And you can talk about recent studies that show that 20% or better of people in their 60s are working past 65. Some are working well past 65. At least 50 to 60% are going to go back to work part-time at some point in their retirement for various reasons that we'll discuss. And then a lot of people are rotating in and out of retirement. So the one thing we know for sure is that we're not going to go back to a time when people retired at a given age just because they're expected to or because they're supposed to. So, you know, you, the advisor, this is a good time for you to talk about the changes that you've witnessed around retirement since you got in this business. If you've been in this business for 15, 20, 25, 30, some of you even more, talk about, you know, when I first got in this business, this is what it was all about. And today, it has really changed radically, and walk them through what you've witnessed. And there'll be a chance for you to do that later as well on a more expanded basis. So one of the things that's really helpful in understanding retirement is understanding where the idea came from in the first place. And one of the things I like to mention to people is that, you know, if retirement was sort of an organic principle, if it was a natural phenomenon, we would find examples of institutionalized retirement in the earliest manuscripts of the history of mankind. But in fact, we don't. The first incident of institutionalized retirement took place in 1885. It was literally invented by German Chancellor Otto von Bismarck, who invented or introduced the idea of sort of a governmental pension. It was really actually the design of it was sort of a disability insurance program for invalidated workers that were 70 or older. The age of 65 didn't get implemented until, I believe it was 1916 or 1918, right in that range. Originally, it was set at 70 and then later lowered to 65. Now, and by the way, just, you know, sort of an aside here that's kind of humorous that I like to share with people is that two numbers that might interest your audience. One, von Bismarck himself, when he legislated the retirement age at 70, was in fact 76 years old personally. So he apparently got grandfathered in. And the other number that's interesting is that the average German worker in 1885 lived to the ripe old age of 46. And so you literally had a retirement age that was set at 24 years past life expectations. And so if we were to fast forward that sort of math into our modern day and age, that would set the retirement age at about 110. So it's kind of some interesting math for people to think about. Now, from 1885, we got to fast forward 50 years to bring the conversation to the United States of America. And in 1935, in the midst of the Great Depression, the Social Security Act was passed. It was actually originally called the Older Workers Pension Act, and it didn't catch on. Nobody wanted to be a part of the old fogey fund, and so they renamed it, rebranded it. The Social Security Act had a better marketing ring to it. And the age was originally set at 65 years of age, but what they found, they later learned, they probably should have learned this before they set the age, was that the average American was living to be 63 years old and obviously wasn't looking forward to getting their first Social Security check 2 years after because they wouldn't be eligible as they were dead. So the age was set back or throttled back to 62 for eligibility. In 1937, that was the year that happened, so fully 80 years ago now. So it was set at 62, and people lived to be 63. So when you think about it in those terms, you can see that what retirement was originally designed to be, it was designed to be a one-year bridge from, as I like to put it, from the loading dock to the loading dock. And people didn't live very long in their retirements. So that sort of gives you a historical perspective of what retirement was designed to be. And It sort of leads us into a conversation about what are some of the institutional, and by the way, I like to characterize retirement as an institutional age invention that was designed for institutional age realities. And one thing that's really of interest to audiences on this topic is that industrial age invention is what I meant to say. It was an industrial age invention designed for industrial age purposes. And in the industrial age, what people traded for a paycheck was literally physical output. And so it just made sense to the industrialists that if you were 60 years old or older, that your physical strength and stamina was waning and that we could pull you out of the industrial line and replace you with a 20-year-old and our machine would resume its efficiencies, that we really it wasn't going to hurt the manufacturing process, so to speak, by removing 60-year-olds. But today, we don't trade physical output for a paycheck so much as we trade intellectual output, intellectual capital, relational capital, who we know. Intellectual capital is what we know. Relational capital is who we know and sort of the networks we developed in life. And that all adds up to experiential capital, that people are willing to pay for experience today. And, you know, example I like to use is, if you had to have a major surgery, do you want to go to the surgeon who's performed 2,000-plus procedures or the one who's on their 30th? And obviously, every one of us would pick the one with experience. And that's so today, we don't live with an industrial age reality. We live with an experience age reality. But we have some remnants left over from this industrial age that just no longer fit. And so we have to realize that we don't rely on this physical output anymore, and we rely more on what's between our ears and sort of the relationships that we've built. So, you know, what's left over? What are these relics that I'm talking about? Well, first of all, we don't retire today at 62 and die at 63 and 64. We don't live in company towns like people did in those days. We don't work on the same job our whole life. I don't know if you know what the number is, but I think I read a recent statistic that the average person today is going to work six or seven different companies.
Oh, at least I'd say.
Yeah, and most people are not going to live out their life on a company pension. The company pension is almost a relic now. It's not completely a relic, but it's definitely headed in that direction. So the next part of our discussion is, we know retirement's changed, but what happens if you don't change your approach? Because the old model was a paternalistic model where you went to work for one company, you lived in the company town, you had the company pension, and, you know, paternal company was going to take care of you. Well, nobody's going to take care of you anymore. And so we have to take charge of our own destiny. And one of the things I talk about in the new retirement mentality is the new IRA. It's the individual retirement attitude. And the individual retirement attitude has two components to it. Number one, I will do what I want, not what others expect. Just because society, corporations, cultures expect me to do this and that at that age doesn't mean I have to. And two, there's a practical aspect here. I must create my own pension to thrive in the future. I can't wait for a company to come through with me. And obviously that onus has already shifted in terms of self-directed IRAs and 401ks and 403bs, et cetera. So people are realizing they have to take charge of it. But this is an attitude that I think is required to succeed with this proposition of retirement in the modern age we live with, is that, number one, I don't have to do what they expect me to do. Now, obviously, some of your clients are part of corporate cultures that have expectations and seem to pressure people to do this, that, and the other. Some corporations are changing. Others are sort of falling behind the curve on that. So a lot of your clients are going to have to negotiate with their workplace, and it's important to have this conversation with your clients before they get to that retirement age. So if they want to negotiate a phased retirement with their company, they can do that before they make a radical move. So the next thing that we want to talk about here is, what are the challenges? You know, we're saying this conversation is bigger than just money. So what are the challenges that people face today, the existential, the life style challenges as they move into this period of retirement. There are a number that we've identified here, and there are so many studies that demonstrate this. One is the sense of identity, a loss of a sense of identity. This is something we've observed. Now, I live in a town filled with doctors. I live in where the headquarters of the Mayo Clinic is, and this is a very common phenomenon with doctors, that after they retire, they don't know who they are anymore. Some people struggle with social and relationship challenges. All their networks are around work, or customers that they called on, or, you know, the people that they did business with, or the team that they were a part of. And now they're faced with the prospect, some people, especially we find this with men, who are struggling to form new social networks, especially people that don't have hobbies. Now, people that have social networks at work, and maybe they belong to a golf club today and they build a broad network there or something like that, that's a different situation. But people who don't have those sorts of hobbies and networks outside of work are going to struggle with this. Another issue, and this is a big issue, and I think this is a really prominent factor in people's decision-making today, is a change or reduction in mental stimulation. And the studies that have come from the Alzheimer's Dementia Institute have demonstrated that the progression of those two disease states commences, and I'm talking in terms of lifestyle factors here, not genetic factors, but lifestyle factors, it commences with a loss of mental stimulation. And I'm not just talking about doing crossword puzzles or Ken or Sudoku. I'm talking about real life puzzles that people solve. And when that stimulation, when that mental challenge, intellectual challenge disappears in people's life, the demise begins. There are also psychological issues around not getting a paycheck. I often tell audiences that one of the scariest days in your economic life is the last day you cash a paycheck. And the reason is because the last day you cash a paycheck is the first day that the price of everything really begins to matter. And, you know, I witnessed this with a friend of mine who retired last year, and he morphed within 6 weeks into what I called Captain Coupon. He knew how to save a dollar buying everything everywhere. It didn't matter what we were talking about. He could tell you how to save a buck. Why? Well, because they're now faced with the prospect of a static income and inflationary cost for the rest of their life. And so there's sort of a economic paranoia that begins to set in, and I think a lot of you advisors listening to this understand exactly what I'm talking about. Another issue is boredom. All this time to fill in the day, and people have no idea how they're going to fill that time. And then, you know, I've seen statistics, and Steve, I don't know what you've seen on this, but the average amount of hours of television watched by retirees in the first year. I don't know if you've seen anything on that, but it's a crazy number, right?
Yeah, it's so a big number. Yep.
Yeah, and we're just going to sit here and watch Jerry Springer and enjoy our life? I don't think so. And so this is an issue for people. And, you know, I often talk to retirees and they say, well, how you doing? They say, well, I'm staying busy. And I never let that answer go. I say, busy doing what? Because if you're staying busy just for the sake of busyness and buzzing around like a fly, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, you got to stay busy doing things that are meaningful to you. And that's important, to fill that time with things that actually are fulfilling to you. And then finally, one of the other challenges that's come up in the studies is a lot of people experience anxiety and depression as they enter into retirement. So obviously these are very serious challenges that we need to deal with, and that your clients are going to grapple with as they go into retirement. So now what, right? What are we going to do? How are we going to address this issue in our own personal lives? The first thing I want to do, this is going to be our first interactive part of the seminar now, is we're going to have your clients, you're going to invite your clients to fill out the retirement observations checklist and then discuss the results. And, you know, originally when I developed this exercise, it was just a question. But then we developed the checklist to sort of help prod people and stimulate people's thinking around it. And when we first, this was actually born in a seminar like what you're going to conduct with your clients in client seminars. And we would just say to that, we'd have people seated at a round table, and make sure you do that when you have this seminar. Have round tables where you have 6 to 8 people seated at each table. That really helps this conversation along. And when we first invented the exercise, we just simply asked the question, What observations have you made watching other people retire? And it was absolutely amazing. You could hardly shut people up. They just had a storehouse, a treasure trove of stories, and there were a lot of caveats and warnings in those stories about, yeah, my dad retired and he was dead in a year, or my neighbor retired and he was bored to death, and, you know, all people start telling all these stories. And then, you know, it's an open-ended question. We're not trying to steer it toward negative stories about retirement. It's simply asking, what observations have you made watching other people retire? Some people have positive stories of people are finding balance, they're traveling, they're doing things, they're learning new things. But what we want to do is we want to give people this opportunity to have this conversation. So have them fill out the retirement observations checklist. And on the left-hand side is saying, you know, what concerns do you have as you head into retirement based on what you've observed? And the other is, what have you observed others doing well? So the negative observations on the left, the positive observations on the right, have them fill it out and then have them go around the table and talk about what they've experienced. And, you know, you want to allow, I'd say a good at least 10 minutes, maybe even it could be 10 to 15 minutes for this exercise because people are going to be talking. But let's just say for the sake of discussion here, you give them 10 minutes at their table. There's six people at each table to eight people. So that's going to be a minute, minute and a half, 2 minutes for each person. And then you might want to another sort of dialogue you can throw on top of this is, you know, have someone at your table take notes of the things that really jump out at you. And then you, as a facilitator, when the time's up, say, okay, I'd like to hear one thing from every table, that something that was very common in the stories that you told, and sort of get an aggregate story coming from the audience. So this is going to be a really interactive part of the seminar. And people really, really enjoy this conversation. So,
and let me just add one thing, Mitch, before you move to the next slide. And that is that during this 10 minutes or so, when each table is going through this, I think it'd make a lot of sense for the advisor to be walking around the room and just kind of eavesdrop a little bit on some of the different conversations and let people know that you're there, you're moving around, and you're going to pick up some things. And then as you go back and start asking each table to share an idea, you may have heard something too that you can share that you can add. So again, it just makes it a very interactive presentation. And then I also want to mention, as we look at how the presentation is structured, so as we started out, Mitch talked about just the return on life concept, how we need to focus on that. Then we start off with how the whole concept of retirement has been disrupted. So all the things that we're talking about in this presentation, we have already talked about in the different sessions that you've already gone through in the retirement coaching program. So we're hitting some of the highlights in this public seminar, but of course all the details for what we're talking about here, like the retirement observations checklist, you know, we've got a session where we talk a lot about that. So you can get a lot of the detail from that. So we're just hitting some of the high levels. But in terms of the structure here, so we start off with the concept of return on life. We talk about how retirement's been disrupted. Then Mitch went through a brief history of retirement and how it used to be and how it is today and how we think it's going to be in the future. We talk about some of the challenges. So we're really setting the whole stage here to talk about some of the retirement observations, and that leads right into the tool here that Mitch was just talking about. So we definitely have a sequence of the presentation that is leading to an outcome, and ultimately an outcome that we want is, if there's prospects in the audience, we want those prospects to be rushing up to you afterwards or to your table and signing up for an appointment in your office. So we think this is really setting you up in a good position to be an expert, to really understand what's happening in retirement, how things are changing, and you're the person that they can go to help them deal with how things are evolving over time.
Yeah, and I like the idea of eavesdropping on the conversations. I always do that when I do seminars, because you'll hear people say things, and then when you call on the tables, they might not mention the thing you heard that piqued your interest. And so you'll want to say, hey, Mary, I thought I heard you talking about thus and so, and have them talk about the thing that you heard.
Right.
So,
and just maybe another tip right along those lines, Mitch, and I know you do this too, but as professional speakers, oftentimes we'll get to the presentation or the, you know, the event that we're speaking at early, and we'll talk to the attendees and we'll just try and get some stories. And then when we're actually delivering our presentation, we'll pull out something. Well, I was just talking to Tom before I came up here about blah, blah, blah. And when you can, you know, take something that you heard from someone in the audience and share that, it just really helps get you more engaged with the audience. And so I think you can do the same thing here. In many cases, you as the advisor are going to know probably many of the people in the audience. Obviously, if it's a client type event, you're going to know everybody. So if you can, you know, get some of those stories, and of course, you know, you're not going to say anything that would embarrass them, so I don't know that, you know, you necessarily have to get their permission, but being able to, you know, share things about people in the audience that make them look good, I think is also helpful too, as appropriate.
Yeah, and you know, as an advisor, the better you understand your client's stories, the better position you're in, because you may have the opportunity to connect the person who told you a specific story with somebody that needs to hear it. And when things get brought up in your retirement coaching sessions, and to say, you know, I have another client who's dealt with the same thing you're dealing with, and you know, I could connect you to if you wanted to. You know, and you got a network there of people who can sort of help each other and do some retire mentoring, if you will. So that's, you know, you're going to be probably a good half hour into the seminar by now, at least 25 minutes. And so then the next thing we want to talk about is, you know, what have we learned about retirement? There was a RAND study done on the great unretirement trend in America. And so what did they find out? Well, there are three things. Number one, it takes people 2 to 4 attempts to get it right. And so, you know, gone are the days of jumping off the retirement cliff with your platinum parachute. I think the parachutes are made of lead now. And, you know, the idea or the expectation that we have one plan in place and we're going at that and we hope we have a safe landing, That's over. It's going to take the average person 2 to 4 attempts to get it the way they want it. And some people are going to retire and tell you they flunked and they had to go back to work part-time, and then they'll try it again later and that didn't work out too well, and then they'll try it again and they finally come into a comfort zone. Then there's the 6-month rebound, where people that retire for about 6 months and they realize, you know what, I need something to engage my mind, my time, my personality, my social interest. I need to do something. And so they'll go back to work part-time. And what the RAND study discovered is that people tend to underestimate the benefits of work, and we're going to talk about that here shortly, but they underestimate the value of work, at least on a part-time basis. And then the third thing that they discovered in the RAND study on retirement was the diminishing returns on leave. There's a law of diminishing returns when all you have to do is play. The play is no longer as fun as it used to be. And, you know, I often tell a story of running into a guy on his first day of retirement, how giddy he was and how excited he was. And then I ran into him a couple, 3 months later, and he wasn't as giddy as he was when I first saw him. And I said, well, you know, what's up, man? And he said, well, there's one thing they didn't tell me. I said, what's that? And he said, well, when I was working, he said, my golf was my catharsis. But he said, now that I'm not working, my golf is my work. And when I have a bad day at golf, I have a bad day at work. And so his hobby wasn't as fun anymore. And that's just a natural law. You know, Shakespeare said, leisure is a beautiful garment for a day, but it's a horrible choice for permanent attire. People just aren't designed to do nothing but play. It's got to be a balance. We'll talk about that here momentarily. And so people who have nothing to do but play, they become pessimistic, they become bored, they become grumpy, all kinds of things happen and they're not good. So we've learned some things, right? It takes 2 to 4 attempts that people undervalue the value of work and later realize it and want to go back and do a little part-time work, and they realize that leisure isn't good when it's all you have to do. So what's this all about? It's really about finding your balance. The challenge here is find your balance between vacation and vocation. And everyone's balance is different, right? We all have to sort of find our place. And so the vacations help us to appreciate our vocation, and our vocations help us to appreciate our vacations. And I already quoted the Shakespeare line. I guess you could save it for here if you wanted to. So now the question comes up, hey, what about you worker bees out there? You know, you can refer to your audience and say, I know some of you have told me you're going to die with your boots on. So I love what I do, and I want to do it the rest of my life, and I already take enough trips, and I already got balance in my life. And, you know, you might be that worker bee. Warren Buffett's a worker bee. He said, you know, Warren Buffett, I believe, he's well into his 80s now. And I remember when he was 65, they asked him if he's retiring. He said, no. He said, they said, when are you going to retire? He said, 2 years after I die. And he knew that if he stopped using his brain, stopped engaging in the challenges of his business and his business life, that it was just going to be a spiral for him. And so he was a smart guy. And you probably got clients like that, a lot of professionals like that, self-proprietors or lawyers or accountants or, you know, there's different types of people. They just want to, you know, I know a lot of dentists are like this too, that they want to, you know, start working part-time, but they want to stay engaged in their practice. So what's important here is that you do what's right for you. And if you're a worker bee, you know, this is sort of your time as an advisor to give them the permission slip they're looking for. Say, look, you don't have to do anything that the world's telling you to do at any given age. Just because you're 65 doesn't mean you need to quit. And you're seeing more and more examples of that in our working culture today. It's, you know, my attorney is now in his 70s, and he told me, he said, I love what I do. I love the people I work with, and I love solving people's problems. And he's still absolutely a master at what he does. Well, why? Because it's experience that makes you good in that trade. And the more experience you have, the better off you are. So here's your chance to give those worker bees a permission slip to go ahead and do what they want to do. And so why is it that people, we're continuing this conversation around work, why is it that people, some of you in this room are going to continue work, even on a part-time basis? What are the top reasons that people give for wanting to continue their work life? The number one reason is that people feel it helps them to stay healthy, that they didn't feel as healthy when they were just sitting around doing nothing or just playing all the time. Money for extras is always a benefit. Staying socially active. And then finally, the fourth reason is loving the challenge, just having the challenge in your life to learn new things, to stay current with what's happening. You know, when you get to the point where you no longer care what's happening, you no longer care to stay current with trends and what's happening in the industry, then that's a signal that's probably time to go. So I have always, to help this conversation around work along, I've always tried to sort of redefine what work means, because, you know, the phrase I often use is that work is no longer a four-letter word. For some of you in the audience, it may be, but for a lot of you, it may not be. And I often, I speak to a lot of advisor audiences, and I pose this question to you, the advisor, and say, how many of you love, absolutely love some of the things you do on a daily basis? And almost every advisor raises their hand. And so I challenge them with, how are you going to replace that when you retire? How are you going to replace that satisfaction and that fulfillment that you get from some of the things that you do on a daily basis? So work need not be a four-letter word, and a lot of people have come to a place with their work where it's really a part of who they are. And so the definition that I like to offer about work is that it is an engagement that brings value to others and meaning to you. And one of the things I want you, and I often repeat that definition, you'll see that people will be writing that down. Work is an engagement that brings value to others and meaning to you. That's a broad territory there. There's so many things that bring value to others, and there's so many different things that bring meaning to me. And one of the things you want to note after you give that definition is let people know, notice that I didn't say anything about money in that definition. So this could be a volunteer engagement that brings value to others and meaning to you, or it could be an engagement for pay. The important thing is that the thing you're doing is meaningful to you and it brings value to other people. So when is the time to go? That's the big question, right? Well, I like to rephrase it this way. What's the expiration date on your intellectual, relational, and experiential capital? You don't have to go because others expect you to go. You go when you're ready to go. Go when you're tired, go when you're bored, go when you're worn out, go when you're weary of the experience, go when you don't care anymore, and go when you've lost your curiosity. Those are the signs that it's time to go. So, what is the new retire mentality challenge? We want to do these five things. First of all, we want to pursue what is meaningful in our life. Second of all, we want to challenge our mind, our body, and our spirit. We never want to come to a place of complete complacency where nothing, we're not challenging ourselves physically and intellectually and spiritually. Three, we want to round out our pursuits. We want to find some balance between vacation and vocation. Four, and this is a practical measure, we want to delay our distributions as long as we can. You're going to get your greatest Social Security benefit if you wait to the last eligible age to do it. You're also going to have those years of compounding. You think about the power of compounding. Well, when does compounding have its greatest impact? In the last few years. So if you can delay taking distributions for 5 years, think of the compounding that you're adding to your nest egg. And then the final challenge I give people is watch your attitude instrument. You know, stay focused on your horizon. Keep trying new adventures. Keep learning. Keep setting new goals. The attitude instrument in an airplane, I'd love to explain this to people, is it shows where your wings are in relationship to your horizon. It's really, attitude isn't a feeling. It's about a direction. And do you have direction going forward? Do you have horizons you're reaching toward? Do you have new adventures? Are there things you're going to learn? These are the things. If you follow these five new retire mentality challenges, you're going to have fulfilling years ahead of you. So attitude is everything. And, you know, the attitude going into the return on life retirement is basically, I'm going to age the best way I know how, but I'm going to refuse to get old. And I often like to tell people the difference between age and old. All right, age is a chronological measure, but old is an attitudinal measure, right? It's like the, if you want to use a great quote, use the old Satchel Paige quote. When they asked him how old he was, he said, how old would you be if you didn't know how old you were? Okay, and Satchel Paige was the rookie of the year at age 42. He pitched his last major league, had his last major league appearance in his mid-60s. This is a guy that understood positive aging. And then here's a great research fact that came out of Yale. You want to add 7.5 good years to your life? This Yale study found that the number one factor helping people have more good years is simply by changing their view of aging and maturity. In other words, instead of being pessimistic and apologetic about your age, start rejoicing in your added years and maturity and what you've learned. Talk about what's ahead of you instead of what's behind you. And that attitude literally is the biggest, most prominent factor on people adding good years to their life simply by changing the way they view the aging process. I just think that's phenomenal. And, you know, right here at the Mayo study, they did a study on stress and pessimism and also found that attitude plays a major role in successful aging. In my book, The New Retire Mentality, I talk about the vitamin C's of successful aging. This is a really good little piece to share with your clients. The last 30 years of gerontological studies on successful aging have produced these five factors. I'll just happen to start with the letter C, so I couldn't help it. I had to go with the pun about the vitamin C's of successful aging. And here they are. Number one, connectivity. Stay connected to those you love and those that you're energized by and those that love you and that are energized by you. And that's why moving away to a gated community 1,500 miles away where you don't know a soul and you even hate their accent probably isn't a good idea for a lot of people. As a matter of fact, I talked to somebody just last year at Pinehurst, and he told me in the 10 years that he's lived there, 70% of his neighbors have moved back home to reconnect with the people that they really were energized by and enjoyed being with. Second, vitamin C is challenge your mind and body. Push your body, push your mind, continue to challenge yourself. Third, vitamin C is stay curious. A mind that's not learning is deteriorating. Or as the Iowa farmer told me, your mind is a melon. If you're not using it, it's turning to mush, right? So curiosity is a big factor in successful aging. The fourth vitamin C is foster creativity. Do generative tasks, because generative tasks have been linked to living longer and better. And any kind of creative, it could be woodworking, it could be music, it could be art, it could be writing, any sort of creative enterprise or exercise is good for helping people live longer and better. And then the final vitamin C is live charitably. Helping others is its own reward and increases every person's sense of purpose. And we've got a quote here by Theodore Green who said, "We get old because we give things up." So we don't have to give things up if we want to age successfully. So it all comes down to this. Let's retire on purpose. This is a time for purposeful engagement. Back to that earlier quote that we shared, a successful retirement is when we have enough purpose to get up in the morning and enough money to sleep at night. So it's a time for purposeful engagement. What about your bucket list? Do you have you developed a bucket list? Are there areas you want to make an impact? Are there relationships you want to have make an impact? Are there places you want to go, people you want to see? And then the final question here is, who is your retire mentor? Who can you look to as a really good example of how to do this well? Sit down and talk to that person. Find out about their journey. I'm sure they didn't just fall into it. I'm sure they had some bumps along the way. They had some detours along the way and finally figured out how to do this thing right. So your questions are these. As an advisor, you can say to your clients, I want to sit down with you, and I want to help you answer two questions. We're going to go through exercises to help answer these questions. The two questions we have to answer are, number one, how will you allocate your time? And number two, how will you invest in who you are? Okay? And so we're going to walk into an exercise here called My Retirementality Profile. This is sort of a personality profile meets the retirement proposition or the retirement transition. So this is a really good exercise for couples, and as you head into retirement, you have to realize that maybe your expectations of retirement are different than your partner's, and so it's important to understand each other. A lot of couples go into retirement expecting their partner to have the same approach and same attitude toward retirement that they have, and then later realize that they don't share their approach, and they're disappointed. So what this is going to tell you is, how are you wired when it comes to retirement? And there's four aspects of life that people seek to fulfill. One is leisure. The other is personal renewal. That could be at the physical level, could be at the intellectual level, going back to school, taking classes, going to university, could be at the spiritual level, going on missions, getting a deeper involvement with their church. The next area is vocation, doing things related to work or their particular skill set. And the fourth area of life that people look to for fulfillment is connecting with others. It could be with friends or social groups. It could be family. It could be with children, grandchildren. It could be with fraternity or sorority-type groups in their community. But what's important is that this profile will help you to understand your personal wiring as you head into this stage of life. And so this is the final exercise that you're going to take people through, and they'll get a good idea of where they're at. And it's really interesting because I rarely have ever seen couples who have an exact match on this profile. They'll fill out the profile, they'll add up the numbers, they'll plot them on the graph, and then you can lead them in a conversation that says, you know, if you have time for the conversation, you can say, you can take this conversation home. If you do have time at the seminar, the conversation goes like this: what are areas you have in common? Talk about those, and then what are the areas where you have the greatest separation in terms of your view or your perspective as you head into retirement, and how are you going to negotiate that? But what we find is that this is a really great conversation for people to go home with and discuss, and so the couples walk away realizing we've got to have a realistic expectation as we go into this stage of life, and then you can make your offer at this point of offering any services you want to around retirement and talk about your process and your coaching. We're hoping that there's prospects in the crowd that haven't gone through retirement coaching with you, and you can say, you know, if you'd like to go through our retirement coaching program, we first talk about the lifestyle factors of retirement, and then we get into the financials of retirement. So with that, Steve, I'll turn it back over to you.
Yeah, well, that was great, Mitch. And just a couple comments here. One is right here at the end, Mitch, you were talking about the call to action. So here on this last page, you see it just says thank you. You can actually customize this slide. You can put your contact information on there and put whatever message you want in terms of the next action. So if you want to sign people up for an appointment in your office during the event, you know, here's an opportunity to do that. So just have some type of call to action, because we don't want you to just give information. And even if it's existing clients, if that's your whole audience is existing clients, and that's fine too, but have something that you want them to do as a result of them taking the time to come to this. And it could be what Mitch was saying is, hey, here's a couple exercises. Now take these home with you and continue this conversation. We really want you to get the best life possible here in retirement. So we always want to have some kind of call to action. You can customize this last page here. A second thing is, I think this is a great presentation to have your clients bring their friends. And I know this is an issue that I get from advisors for decades, which is, Steve, I love the idea of doing a client event, and I always ask my clients to bring a guest or bring a friend. And rarely does a client bring a guest or bring a friend to an event. Well, as you're going through this, Mitch, I'm thinking, man, this is a perfect presentation to bring for your clients to bring their friends with that are you know, going through retirement or nearing retirement. Because you bring a table, let's say you've got a 6-top or 8-top table in there, and tell your friends, hey, you know, we got tables of 6. Bring 2 of your other couples with you, because we're going to go through a couple of fun exercises. And if you bring your friends, you guys know each other, you'll have a heck of a time, a lot of fun going through this, because you have a lot of history together and you can really share, you know, some of your experiences. So it'll be a lot of fun. So I think this is an excellent presentation to really play up the idea of having your clients bring their friends with them and can have a lot of fun with it.
Well, and I need to share this too. I've done this presentation hundreds of times, and it really goes over well with clients. And what a lot of good advisors have done is they've let people know in the invite, hey, we're going to talk about retirement, and we're not talking about money, right? We're talking about how you're going to spend your time, what are you going to do the rest of your life. We'll eventually get to the money question, but not at this seminar.
Right.
And so that, you know, a lot of times people are reticent to come because they think there's going to be a sale or something.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And we're not selling you anything at this either.
Well, we're selling retirement coaching, which everyone feels a need for.
Well, right. But, I mean, essentially we're selling an appointment to come visit us. But obviously we're not selling any products here.
Yeah, this content resonates. That's all I want to say is this is not a proposed theoretical presentation. I've given this hundreds of times, and it resonates.
Yep. And the other thing I want to mention here is we are we'll get a transcript of this as well. So as you know, Mitch, obviously you did a great job. You said you've delivered this presentation many, many times. So we'll get the transcript, and while you're not going to repeat exactly everything that Mitch just talked about in the presentation, I think there were many, many good sound bites in there and ideas that Mitch talked about that we want to make sure that you've got a hard copy of the presentation, and so you can pull out some of the things that seem to make sense to you and put them in your own words. But I think this will be a dynamite presentation for you that is a great tool for the retirement coaching training that you've all gone through, and will help you deepen relationships with existing clients and also generate some new relationships as well.
Yeah, right on. So
all right.
Yeah, that should do it.
All right, great. Well, we'll wrap up the presentation here, and thanks to all for watching, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.